You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. Hello and welcome back to Feed Your Head. Tonight we have a pre-recorded interview. And we've had some trouble with it, so I hope it's all going to work now. Patrizio Beckerle is here. So, and tonight we have with us, I hope I don't mispronounce his name, Patrizio. Oh, goodness, I'm going to. Just pronounce your name for us, would you, please?
In German, it's Patrizio Beckerle.
Right. Patrizio Beckerle. So, you are in Austria, and I want to thank you for coming in to, you know, do this. We had to, like, finagle a bit, and it was easy, though. Thank goodness for Skype. One of your sites in English is rawhealthandhappiness.com. And then you have another one that is www.rohundfroh.eu, right?
That's right, yes. I made two sites. I started initially with the English version, and then I made the German version too. And
right.
They both relaunched last week and the week before. And
I know that this is a brand new one. You've been working hard at it. And I just admire the fact that you can do your own. So that's all good. Tonight we're going to talk about veganism and Buddhism. And you are both a vegan and a Buddhist. And I would like to ask you, which came first?
First came the Buddhism. Nope. Buddhism was my entry door to everything. Everything of the mind, every place. I couldn't do anything of these things without Buddhism.
Okay. Now, did you grow up that way, or did you grow up with a different kind of religion and then you switched? What happened?
No, not at all. I'm Christian by birth, but
okay.
My family is not very strict Christian, so I had no real confession, no real binding to Christianism. My coming out, I don't know how to call it, to Buddhism was when I stopped playing a computer game and wasting a lot of time with it, and then I started to shuffle all kind of information into my head. I read a lot and about so many delightful things, and after a half or three quarters of a year, I stumbled upon world religions. I wanted to know more about world religions, and I used a lot of audio university lectures about all major world religions. Buddhism was one of the last. Christianism, Judaism, Islam, and Hinduism. It was very interesting. This were a long series of lectures, about 30 to 40 lectures per world religion. And after I studied everything, it was clear to me my way lies in Buddhism.
No, that I mean, you really searched it out as far as reading on different world religions. And I think that's important because I think when we study them, we find out that the core of, well, at least the core of all the religions and spiritual paths that I've studied or heard about, read about, the core is love and compassion and kindness. And we look around us and we see that, you know, not everybody maybe is walking their talk, but different religions or paths appeal to different people. So when you find something that resonates in your heart and soul, well, that's definitely where you should be. So how long have you been a Buddhist then, Patricio?
I think it must be 7 years now.
Seven, okay.
I think it was easy for me because I'm very mind-driven, so I have to understand everything. I'm
okay.
Researching everything. I'll have to do experiments, and Buddhism is so clear. It's just pure logic for me.
Yeah.
And you can expand your mind and your heart to every being in the universe just by understanding how our nature works. It's easy.
Yeah, well, right. I mean, it's easy, or it's simple, and sometimes it's not easy. The two are not the same. But when you catch on to just a part of it, then things start to unfold, I think. And that was how you first, I believe, well, you started out like almost everybody in the world eating meat and dairy. And then, though, you became a vegetarian first, right?
That's true. I was just a vegetarian because of my misunderstanding about animal suffering. I read the book of Mahatma Gandhi, his autobiography, and he writes about vegetarianism, and then it suddenly became clear for me. That was, by the way, before I became Buddhist. Then it became clear to me that why do animals have to die because of my meals? It wasn't necessary at all, and it wasn't appealing anymore, and I stopped doing it.
Yeah.
That was one of the starting key points of my journey since then. That was about seven or 8 years ago, I think.
Yeah. But that was me decades ago. I mean, it was just easy to become a vegetarian, and like you, I didn't realize the horrors that the animals that give us the milk and cheese and all go through.
Yeah,
and
of course
it's I thought, well, as long as I bought eggs that were from cage-free chickens. But then, you know, then I saw what that means. And even from my local person down here, he was selling some cage-free eggs, which I bought. And he told me he had visited the guy who, you know, had the chickens. And he said, they're outside. And he showed me this tiny, maybe, 15 by 15 kind of plot where these chickens, that was them being outside. The thing was, he was getting so many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of eggs from them, like every day. It's like, okay, there's something wrong here. And that was, I just stopped the eggs. And then I thought, well, okay, this is really stupid. I cut back on cheese, and then I just stopped it. And cream for coffee. I mean, me going from vegetarianism to veganism was like the easiest thing I've ever done, I think. You know, I mean, once you understand, you don't want to take part in it anymore.
Yeah. As I said, it was just a misconception because I never researched anymore. I just, at that time, I only wanted to make clear no animal has to die.
Yeah.
And if it is killed so I can eat, then I knew it had to die. I wasn't aware about the suffering in the dairy industry or egg industry or any other industry concerning animal produce products. So I didn't research this. I wasn't aware. I wasn't nutrition aware. I didn't thought about this either. It just was the thing. I don't want that animals have to die. So I was vegetarian.
Well, I think that's, I think a lot of people come to it because of the animals being killed and suffering. And then later they find out how much better they feel, and then they start getting into the whole nutritional aspect. And then, you know, many also, I mean, in there, they're all combined for me. I mean, the saving the planet, and this is the way we do it. by not knocking down rainforests to cattle to murder, you know, that kind of thing. So it just sort of melds together. But like you, for me, it was first because of the animals. And then I noticed that I wasn't nearly as sick. I didn't get colds and all these things like my friends did, and the flu and all that.
Right.
And it's like, wow.
Maybe you're vegan or vegetarian?
Yeah, I mean, either, but I'm vegan.
Okay.
It's just, it was so easy to go from being vegetarian to being vegan. Now, I'm not raw, and that's what we're going to talk about, or one of the things we're going to talk about, because you are raw. Am I right?
That's true, yeah.
Yeah. And how did that come about, Patricio?
It was very strange. Many, many things in my last 7-8 years of life were very instantaneous. Like this going raw, because, as I said, I had no awareness about nutrition or these things. I just wanted to be vegetarian, so no animal has to die, actually, so I can eat it. And then I was sick. I lay in bed, and a friend of mine gave me a video from an Austrian lecturer about the... It's in German, it's... okay. It's called, like, the lies about our nutrition in our life, in German just. And it was about what happens in our body when we eat certain things, and where our body tries to get all the waste products and shuffles stuff around so it can survive our eating habits. And then it all became clear to me. And I knew I have to stop this, because it's just such a great experiment. And I'm very lazy about things and about nutrition, and I wanted to change this. And it came to me in an instant. And then the next day, I was still ill. I tried to change it, and it took only weeks or months, I think, until I stumbled upon the 80-10-10 diet. And after I read this book by Dr. Doug Graham, I think was completely clear for me. I knew he was right in every line of his book, and even if I don't like what he writes, or if I find it inconvenient, it's nevertheless true. And so and so it was clear I have to do this. And it was very hard emotionally, because we have our habits and they stick. They stick.
no, we do. And it is. We might mention that the 80-10-10 diet has to do with 80% carbohydrates, 10% oils and fats, and
oil.
Right, and 10% protein.
It's actually 80 or more percent.
Right.
Of carbohydrates.
Right.
From fruit, majorly. So no starches or such thing, because it's hard to digest and have to be cooked most of the time. But starches would be okay in, let's say, a pumpkin or something. And 10 or less percent from fat, plant fat, no oils, because they're refined and not...
Well, right. So that would be the difference there, right.
10% is not very much, because even a banana has a few percent of the calories in fat, and protein it's the same with protein, 10 or less percent of proteins, which is enough.
Yeah, which is actually pretty hard to get less than 10% protein, because, like, a tomato has, 14%? People don't understand that fruits and vegetables do have...
They do, yes.
Yeah, a lot of people realize that avocados and nuts and olives have the fat, but, you know, everything seems to have a tiny bit. So it's not, once you concentrate, I think you're pretty balanced. I do know a lot of people who are vegan who are not necessarily healthy because they still eat a lot of processed foods. And I mean, it's true that what they eat, no animal had to die for or be abused, but they eat a lot of things that are very processed and have a lot of unnatural things in it and everything. So once you go raw, or even like myself, who I don't eat processed foods, 1% out of 300 or so. I mean, I just really don't, because I know what's in it. And like they say, if you can't pronounce it, you don't need to eat it. You know? So,
like Doug says, if it comes in a jar or something, then you don't eat it.
Exactly. So but then when you go raw, and I know there's people who say, wow, you know what? So you just eat apples and pineapples all day? But you have wonderful meals, because I've seen pictures on Facebook in a couple different groups of vegans, and you have a lot of variety, and you take these beautiful pictures. I mean, anybody looking at those would say, oh yeah, I mean, I could do that. I could live on that, I think, you know? How did you start with your cooking? I mean, did somebody show you? Did you look at YouTube videos? How did you get into this?
Frankly, I just use what I have. Okay, after doing it 2.5 years, it gets a little easier. You internally know what fruits and what veggies will combine. It's not everything does combine it.
No.
So the first year, it was my experiments were not all the time very lucky, but the last, let's say, half a year, it's everything I do fits perfectly. It's very, very seldom that I produce something that's not tastes not very delightful. I posted photos from what I made.
Mm-hmm.
English Facebook album, and I got a little resonance. But more interesting was that there's a lot more resonance on the German speaking room. So I started to post things on German too, but very seldom, once a week, every 2 weeks maybe.
Oh.
Now I post every day, so I get maximum resonance, and the people like it a lot because they get inspired. And that's the
exactly
most important part, inspiring other people to try out new things, to see new things, and
yeah.
That's the mission.
Well, now, what would you say would be the most important cooking, well, not cooking, preparing tool or utensil or something in the kitchen for you?
Oh, from the most important is, there is no most important, because you can always eat the fruits straight, like they came from the tree or,
mm-hmm.
or from the bushes. So you don't need everything, but it's nice to have a lot of items.
Mm-hmm.
Like a high-speed blender. You can make very creamy sauces with a high-speed blender, and it's just nice. It's nice to have, and it's very important to keep you happy. So I always try to keep me happy, because food is no comfort food, so I have to be delighted from the things I make with fruits. And so I have some tools like a high-speed blender, like my BlendTec, or like the spiralizer. It's a wonderful tool. If you want to have noodles, you can make noodles out of a lot of things, like butternuts, pumpkin, or daikon radish, or zucchini. It's an awesome tool, and the people like it. They like to use it, and they get to grasp the concept of raw food and the philosophy. Yeah, you can make noodles and it's great, and they try that.
It looks like fun. I don't have one. I've seen it. It does look like fun. So, I mean, that is on my list. Now, you live in Austria where it gets pretty cold.
Yes.
And I understand when, you know, we have so many vegan friends who are living, like, in Thailand and different places in Asia. They've got fresh fruit year-round. What do you do? I mean, is it hard there? Is all the everything's imported in the wintertime? Do prices go up? I mean, what's it like?
No, it's no real problem. You can. There are many Canadian guys and girls who are raw foodies. It's no problem. Like you said, you can import everything. The carbon footprint will be much, 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 much less still than if you eat any meat or dairy products.
That's
because of all the feeding and so on. So it's okay, and prices are not that high. Of course, I like summer because it's warm and there's a lot of more sun, and I have my garden with my own fruits and veggies, which is very important if you want the highest quality. You can produce your own things, but it's no problem. Bananas, and you have all kinds of fruits, and I have at least 10 types of different fruits in winter lying around and waiting to get perfectly ripe.
Yeah. Well, okay, so you do grow your own in the season.
Yes.
You grow quite a bit then in your own garden, which is good. Do you preserve it in any way? Like,
no.
Do you dry it or can it or freeze it or anything?
No, not at all. I just use what my trees and bushes provide me, and I have still some grapes outside, and I have still some tomatoes outside and such thing. And there will be many more things next year because I've planted a lot of new trees and bushes, and I have a small glass house built a month ago or so. So I will start early next year, and so many more experiments. I love it.
Wow. No, you're very fortunate that you have the space, so you can grow not just a garden, but you can do berry bushes and trees and things.
I'm fortunate, true.
Really? What would you say to somebody who lives in, like, Austria or Canada or here in the States, and it gets really cold, and they don't have a lot of money, because money plays a part, too. You know, are they just supposed to eat apples and carrots all winter? Or, I mean, how can they keep a diet from boring them to death? And I mean, what can they do?
It's first thing, it's important to have fruits. You need to have fruits if you want to live a fruitarian-like lifestyle. You need fruits. Then they have to be ripe, so you have to get the knack about it. How they will get riper when you buy it, because you almost every time buy unripe fruits. So you have to ripen them yourself, and it can need several weeks till they gain peak ripeness, like persimmons or kiwi fruits. I have lying kiwi fruits around for 6 weeks now, and persimmons 4 or 5 weeks, and they're still not every persimmon is ripe. So it needs some time. You have to think in advance. You can't go to the store, I want to have fresh fruits and I want to buy them now. That definitely doesn't work. Bananas, you need several days, up to a week, till they arrive, so you can't just go to a store. But
right.
There are stores which sell ripe fruit, pre-ripened fruits, and that's okay too, of course. But if you want to get cheap, I always buy if they are cheaper, if there's a special offer or something, I get one, I get 15, 20 kilograms, so maybe 30 pounds or something from fruits, and I have sit them around. I have some in the cellar for later ripening. I have them in the living room or kitchen for faster ripening. It's very important to keep you happy.
Yeah. Well, that's funny you say that, because like in the living room or the kitchen or wherever you have room, I have a friend in England who's a fruitarian, and he recently remodeled his home. He got another house, actually. He moved in. He remodeled the kitchen. And there's no cooker. You know, there's no cooker. There's no fridge. He has counter space like you wouldn't believe. He sent pictures out. I mean, lots and lots of counter space, Patrizio. And, you know, fruit everywhere. So you understand. I mean, when if you're writing something in your living room, I know you understand. That's so funny, though, because, yeah, you get the deals when you can, and then you figure out how to keep it, or maybe you overdose on a couple of fruits for a week or two. This is personal, but do you live alone?
I live alone, yes.
You live alone. So you haven't had to do battle with anybody in your own home.
Fortunately not.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be very easy. If you have another fruit here, of course, the ideal thing would be many fruits living in one flat or house or something. It would be ideal.
Yeah.
But it's not that crazy. I have a lot of stuff lying around in the kitchen, of course, but it's very nice, because I can get excited about ripe fruits, and so I surrounded by beautiful fruit all the time, and it's very uplifting.
Well, I think it'd be great to wake up in the morning and look over there and a bunch of tomatoes on the dresser or something. I mean, it's like, okay, well, this is good. I like that. So what about your family, though? Your family and your close friends, have they seen your way, or do they think you're crazy, or do they just, what do they say about your eating?
They all know I'm different and I do different things, because it seems like I love doing different things. I love to swim, not all the time, but I'm a conventionalist against the stream swimmer, I think. Sometimes I try to be a bit conventional, but most of the time I do things other than other people. So it's okay for them. They know that they know that I know what I'm doing, because I'm thriving with it. I get fitter every day, and I'm getting healthier every day, and I'm full of energy, and they like that, but they know they can't do it, because it's far too hard to them, and then it's not their life. They have their mind on other things. But we have one sister who was with me at the 3 to 4 days camp this year in Slovenia, where Dr. Doug Graham was there, and she still is very high raw. She switched to veganism from being an omnivore to veganism, plus very high raw. So
wow, okay.
She eats cooked vegan food, and sometimes I think there is still some normal conventional food mixed in, because it's not everywhere it's easy to get non-vegan food, and I brute force this. I want to do raw veganism, and so I do it, but if you don't have the 100% commitment, it's not very easy.
Yeah.
If you have a business life or something, it's very inconvenient often.
Yeah, the raw, I mean, it's, you know, we can all miss a meal here or there if we're in a situation where the only food is you know, McDonald's or something, like, gag me. But, I mean, for a long period of time, yeah, we do need to eat, and we might not be in a position where we should fast for a week right then. So we have to find something. But then when we go back, our bodies are just so grateful. And so that's
yeah,
what I mean. I don't tell people they have to be 100% pure 100% of the time, because that's just scary when you say, I will never eat anything cooked again. It's like, wow, okay. I have friends who say, well, if there's a family birthday party, I may do this or that. And in fact, this summer, one of my friends went to a family, it's a kid's party, I guess, whatever, and ate a little bit of ice cream and knew he shouldn't. He did. He got so sick. And it's like, yeah, well, you should have, you know, because I know as a vegetarian, I got sick about 3 times when accidentally I ate something that had been made like with meat broth or something. And something had, I guess, bits of meat or something. I got really sick. And I've heard about that. They say that when you stop eating it, your body then isn't willing to digest it again. And it so just for me, I mean, just the fact that it would make me ill would be enough to say, okay, I don't want that. Some people, I guess, it doesn't affect. They'll eat it and then they go back to being vegan or vegetarian and they're fine. But I was going to ask also how a lot of Buddhists I know are vegetarian, as a lot of Hindus are, but they're not vegan. The Buddhists that you know, are they vegan mostly or not?
Most of them not even vegetarian.
No, wow.
It's a contradiction for me.
It is.
I can't really. It's one thing can't go without the other thing, because if you claim to have compassion about all living beings, you definitely have to stop to eat them or wear them or something. So I don't quite understand it. But even the Dalai Lama isn't a vegetarian, so, and he's the embodiment of compassion. So this is one point I don't quite understand too.
But yeah, I admire him greatly. I have met him, the Dalai Lama, but I always, you know, he was a vegetarian, but then a little while back, I read something that even he was, because of whatever illness or something, that his doctor had recommended that he eat
no red meat,
fish or something every week or every couple, I mean, and it was just like, oh no, you know, he knows better. So that made me feel really bad. So I thought that even his doctor is not aware. So that to me is really strange. I have a friend who's involved in the Krishna consciousness movement, and he's vegan hardcore, and he's very upset with the people who are vegetarian in the movement and not vegan, because he says, well, this is hypocrisy, you know? And so, I mean, everybody though is on their own path, and we know that all the paths are trying to get to the top of the mountain, but it does get frustrating, I admit. Do you go to like public meditations and things, or do you practice Buddhism more on your own?
Most of the time I'm practicing at home. Buddhism is a view of everything for me, and it's a tool set. I use the meditations and all kind of stuff. I'm using that as tool, and I use it every day. I have to use it every day because it's part of me now. And it's not very often that I go to public meditations or groups or something, because I always have to do my own thing, and when I want and when I need it, especially. And
exactly.
So it's my own stuff. I have a group. It's a Kamakachi group, but I'm not a very a Mahayana or Vajrayana kind of Buddhist. I don't have a strict lineage. I'm more Theravada. I'm more logic driven and down to the point, and I need no visualizations or something. It's more like I have to understand it very deeply and act like it.
No, visualization is a strong point for me. I mean, I'm very good at that. I tell people that Buddhism saved my sanity at one point.
Of course.
You know, I don't know. I mean, things were so strange in my world, and just by reading and practicing certain things, I came out on the good side. And so, I mean, I'll always be grateful for that. I don't know if you, are you familiar with the name Pema Chodron?
Of course,
okay.
Yeah.
One of her books almost hit me. I was in a used bookstore, and there was a table of, used books, okay, they're even, you know, they're less expensive, and then there was a table there with even less expensive, like used books on sale kind of thing.
Awesome.
And there was this book there that was well used. It was called Start Where You Are. And, I mean, my hand, there was probably no way I could have kept my hand from picking that book up. And that did it. I mean, I have most of her books. I think she's wonderful. She's taught me a lot. And there's a few other Buddhist teachers, too. Jack Kornfield. There's a lot that they have so much to say in such a gentle way. And I think it's I think the world would be much better if we had more people practicing.
Of course.
You know, that's my view on it. But what do you think, besides just living your life, you know, as you do privately and all, what are some of the ways? And now you have the website, so you're talking a lot about food on the website. How much do you talk about the spiritual path?
I chose the name because I want to do it, and I want to connect the two things together.
Okay.
If my journey leads me to this, right now I'm getting so much resonance from the food part, so I give the people some food stuff because it's on my own mind too, because it's an interesting journey, and reporting things is very useful for mankind, I think, even because it raises the consciousness. And the spiritual part, it has to fit in there someday. It's not easy to talk about meditations, because it's another big leap of our mind, and people don't like big leaps of mind and changing of habits and doing meditations because you need them is not very, very appealing to people. It's even easier to get a vision to raw veganism than to get a spiritual non-practitioner being a practitioner.
Okay, yeah, I think
I have no clue how to raise consciousness about this at the moment, so
mm-hmm.
Out of stuff.
I think you're right, though. Well, for some reason, yeah, people are searching, but we are creatures of habit. and so, yeah, something has to just sort of shake us a bit and break that lock. So if you say the people are more apt to, like a vegan would be more apt to change to raw than to decide to meditate, what kind of meditations are your favorite kind?
Most of the time I do samadhi meditation or vipassana. It's just getting my mind clear or processing things on my mind, and it's to realign my own view and don't get too overwhelmed by worldly concerns, because ultimately I just want to be a hermit and and have a clear mind, which isn't very easy because I'm involved in so many things and so many flows, which are great but worldly, and that's a problem, because if it's something is worldly, you drift away from your ultimate reality.
Well, that monkey mind.
Yeah, of course, monkey mind.
Yeah,
it's around all the time, monkey mind, very fast.
Yeah, it is, because for whatever reason, we're just consumed by it, really. And so too, you know, I think a lot of people also are put off or scared by even the word meditation, because, well, you know, that they think that they have to have a room dedicated to this, and they have to wear certain clothes, they have to have certain candles, certain incense, certain music, you know, all of these things. And like we both know, those are fun. They're tools. They're, again, and if, you know, if a certain piece of music gets you, your mind right into that frame, that's great. Use it. But don't think you have to have all these things.
True.
You can meditate in your bedroom. You can meditate in your yard. You can meditate on a train.
It would be a great start to slow down, to start doing things consciously. We are doing things in such rapid speed. We don't paying attention to what we do, and it's a bliss to stop and do every hand movement very consciously, so you can follow every tension of your muscle and so on. Even this would be a great meditation. You don't actually have to sit for it. You can do it in your daily work. Just start doing things consciously. But
well, you know, the preparing the food is a fantastic way to get in touch. And I mean, because you're already been in touch with nature, and particularly like you, when you grow your own, I mean, you grow it, you pick it, you wash it, you chop it, sterilize it, you know, whatever. And I mean, it's all that connection.
True.
So, have you ever or considered, like, I know with the website, this is a form of being a coach. But have you ever thought about, like, person to person or Skype to Skyping, person to person, coaching people?
Of course, I'm very sure it will come in the future. It just started to evolve. It's only a few weeks ago I knew I have to do a new website, and things will unfold for me. I'm very sure of that. If I can be of more service, I will, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't asked you that before, but I was pretty sure that this is coming. And I think you're going to be very good at this. You're going to help a lot of people, Patrick, because Patrick, I'm going to call you Patrick. Yeah.
Call me Patrick.
Patrizio. Yeah. Patrizio is like, well, Patrick.
Well, Patrick, too. It's
okay. Pretty close, huh? But it's something that, well, you're very passionate about. And so you're going to, and you have the knowledge and firsthand experience. So now you said you became a vegetarian about 7 years ago. When did you become vegan?
I was a normal cooked vegan. I switched from vegetarian directly to
raw food.
And then raw food is my,
yeah.
I kicked the vegan part.
Yeah. So to raw vegan, about how long have you been totally raw?
Totally, it's a hard word because I'm doing this since 2.5 years, but
okay.
I like to experiment. So last 7 years, I always did counter experiments too, to prove that it's okay what I'm doing. So I did things that are not okay to prove that it's okay, because if I see a very dirty reaction of my body or my mind when I did things with my mind, then I knew, oh yes, it's true. Because when other people say, don't do this because such and such, it's okay, nice to hear from me, and maybe I'm even resonating with the words, but I like first-hand knowledge.
Right. No, that's true. So you're experimenting on your own body. Do you have any kind of test done by your doctor or a medical person? I know some vegans do that every year or so.
Not yet, because I'm not the doctor kind. I don't like sitting and waiting at doctors. And right now my body is so sensitive to everything. I can't imagine. I wouldn't know if something goes amiss. I can't imagine, because it's stating very, very, very clearly, you have to rest, you have to do this, you have to do this. I'm so full of energy, and I'm training, working out every day almost, and I would know. I would know.
Yeah. Well, what kind of workouts do you do?
I'm doing lots of stuff. Most of the time I'm doing what my body demands, what muscle is able to do more work, because I worked the day before.
Right.
Some
people use like no weights or nothing like that. They just like free form exercise. Do you do that, or do you have weights? Do you go to a gym? Do you have machines?
Well, my family is very unsporty, so my body is very. If someone with better genes would put this effort into his workout, he would look differently. But that's no problem for me. I'm training a lot, and I like my body. I like it feels when I train. I do lifting weights, and I do things like Taibo, Philip Langs. I'm doing that since about 10 years. Since we have it in Austria.
Wow.
I'm doing like PT 24/7, his new program. I'm doing a P90X from Beachbody and P90X 2 and Turbo Fire, and I'm doing a lot of yoga, and I'm like I said, I do all kinds of things in the summer. I'm doing everything outside, and it's a lot of fun to jump around and do to training and carry things around and balance on things. I try to work on every part, on speed, endurance, balance, flexibility, strength, everything, because it all fits together. It has to fit together.
It's all connected. But you're with exercise like you are then with the food. You want that variety, that diversity, so that you're not going to get tired of something.
And the experiments, of course, because everything I do is an experiment for me.
I love that.
I think it's interesting for me.
Right. Well, you're keeping it real for you, and because you want to keep learning too. And like you said, I mean, firsthand, and then you can tell people, well, okay, this is what worked for me. It may not for you, but this worked for me. So I know what that person was talking about. I think that's excellent. I want to give again your website. In English, it's rawhealthandhappiness.com. And in German, I'll spell this, R-O-H-U-N-D, froh.eu. And you're also on Facebook. And if anybody looks up several different vegan groups on Facebook, they'll see your beautiful pictures also. But they're on your wall. I mean, you really have great food, and you make it look very good. So you've got that artist's eye there. So people say, well, wow, I never thought about that before, but hey, that looks so good. I'm going to try. So
the funny thing is that I just learned by doing it, because I'm the complete other side around. Normally I didn't pay any attention how my food looked, so I make it look better so I can present it to the rest of the world.
Exactly.
Kind of interesting. You know, everyone is telling, "Oh, it looks so great," and I'm only smiling.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's true though. That like at home, it may not. We just may throw something together. I don't want to say throw, but you know, I mean. But then, if you're going to show it to somebody else, you want it to look nice. And anyway, yours always look great. So I want to thank you, and I hope you'll come back, Patrick. Patrick, I'm doing it again. Patrizio. Well, you have so much to tell us about, like, spiritual path and veganism, because they are, at least in your case, totally intertwined. And I like that. You're definitely walking your talk, my friend. So thank you so much, and have a great weekend.
Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to listen to the show, and I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to talk to you. Thank you.
Okay. Good night. Thank you to Patrizio Curley and to Nigel Watson. Have a great weekend, everyone.